football on off the ball.
It's the producers in football form. If you're really going to mess up a football club, how could you do it better than this? I just don't think you could.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball's Breakfast Bite, giving you a flavour of Ireland's sports breakfast show.
We did bring you the very sad news earlier that Eddie Jordan had passed away after a diagnosis of cancer. And to talk a little bit more about him and remember him, we have Gary Anderson on the line, a former designer with Jordan F1. Gary, thank you so much for joining us.
No problem. Thank you for calling.
A very difficult morning. Could you maybe give an insight as someone who worked with Eddie as to the person that he was? Because we obviously all know the personality, the character that we see, but you got to see the man up close.
Yeah, I mean, he was one of these people who was he was always a friend. I mean, I first really met him in 1982 or 83. We were both competing in European Formula 3 races all across Europe. And we sort of united together because obviously Eddie was from the south and I was from the north. And our teams sort of traveled together as such. So, you know, he's been a long-term friend, I suppose you might call it. You know, he had to fight for everything he got, to be honest. And, you know, this situation, obviously, he fought to the last minute on it as well. So, you know, he was a fighter all the way. But when we got together, really, for Jordan Grand Prix, he first asked me to join him in 1989 to design the first Jordan F1 car. You know, I thought he was mad then. And I think through his life, he's proven that he's always been a little bit mad. He's always taken risks. But, you know, he was a pleasure to work with. He was a real character. You know, again, as I say, it was more than a working relationship, I suppose you might call it. We were friends. And, you know, up until about 3 months ago, I had been in fairly decent contact with him. But I think he knew a little while ago that it was getting near the mark. And, you know, he didn't want the sympathy, to be honest. He wanted to be Eddie Jordan to the end. And I think that's what he did. So, yeah, it was very sad this morning when I found out about it. But to be honest, it was one of those things. I wasn't expecting it. I wasn't expecting it this quickly. But in reality, it was probably going to happen because, you know, cancer is one of the things you just, you know, you're in the luck of the gods when you get it, whether you come out of it or not.
Yeah, and probably an important message. I know he talked about it on his own podcast whenever he kind of knew himself that things weren't going the right way. The importance of getting yourself checked for these things, whether you're concerned about something or not, just getting those regular checkups really can make the difference. So if there's anything to remember him for this morning, I think that's probably one of the important ones to point out.
Yes, I mean, you know, bringing the message across was very important to him. As I say, it was one of those sort of things where, you know, when you're working for him or with him or whatever, you could always sit down and talk about something. He was always there to talk to and you could bounce stuff off him. So, yeah, it'll be a sad loss to a lot of people. I mean, obviously, Marie and the family are the ones that need the sympathy at this point in time. And, you know, they're lucky in one way that the kids are fairly grown up now. They've all got their own sort of paths and life set out. So it's not as though they're children. But for Marie, it'd be a sad loss because, you know, their lives were sort of intertwined so much. Yeah, they were man and wife, obviously, but their lives were intertwined as well. So it's one of those sort of things where I think, you know, Eddie had a good battle with life. In motor racing, it's never easy. You always learn that, you know, you need to keep fighting. And as I say, I think he fought to the last with this one.
Gary, I think by your timeline there that you mentioned earlier, you were friends for the bones of a decade before the relationship transition into professional aspects. Can you just explain for all of our benefits, what did you actually do with Eddie as a designer for Jordan?
Well, as I say, we were friends for a decade before we started to work together. We were competing against each other in, as I say, European Formula 3. He had his team, Jordan, and I had my team called Anson. And we were competing in different races. And the one thing that was always good about Eddie was, you know, if you had a sponsor on your car, you had a driver with some money in it, Eddie would be trying to nick it on you. You know, he would try to get that money somehow, some way, or that driver somehow, some way. And he came to me at the Birmingham Grand Prix. It was a Formula 3000 race, which we were both competing in at that point in time. And he came to me at the Birmingham Grand Prix in 1989. And he said, I want to put a Formula One team together, for next year, for the year after next. And he said, I'd like you to come and work with me. And I said, no, I don't really fancy doing that. I mean, I'd never really sat down and designed a complete car. We did the Formula 3 cars and one thing or another, but they weren't Formula 1. You know, Formula 1 was this big step. I'd worked in Formula 1 for many years, but not as a designer. So then at Christmas in 89, he called me two or three times at home to the point where I was getting my wife, Jenny, to answer the phone because I didn't want to speak to him and say no anymore. But he convinced me I should do it. And, you know, I started in 1990 with him to design and build this first car, which ran in the 1991 championship. And it got a lot of acclaim. It was a nice looking car. It came from Ireland as such. It was a green car with Fuji sponsorship and 7-Up sponsorship on it. And because Eddie was from the south, as I said, and me from the north, it sort of united Ireland a bit in a big way, I think. And we had a good time working together and fighting the odds. I mean, it was at that point in time, it was the big four, they called it, Formula One. Yeah. The teams were just so hard, and it was lovely to beat them round again. And we achieved that. So, yes, they were good times. There were tough times. There was pressure on Eddie and myself, but we saw it through somehow ourselves.
Coming soon to your Off the Ball podcast feed.
I'm nervous. Police will use tear gas.
Yes, yes, yes.
Oh, Jesus.
You're looking at two of the best professional wrestlers in Mexico City.
Saying we won after your team's won a football game is like saying I had sex after I'm watching Paul.
So if you hear anything about the Gringo Local, that's me, okay?
We were on our own at 3,600 meters.
We have that mark as narcos, cocaine, violence, as a Pablo Escobar thing.
To be honest with you, if I never see Route 40 again, I will be a happy, happy man.
Diverted, a 10-part Off the Ball original series telling the story of sport and other things all the way through Latin America.
I thought Route 40 was the most lonely road in the world. Turns out Route 25 is somehow even lonelier.
Available soon for free on the OTB app.
Joining us to chat about it a little bit more is Grace Davitt and Fiona Thomas. Guys, thank you so much for coming on this morning. Grace, in terms of the opening game of the Six Nations, it's never easy to play France, no matter what, and especially for this setup. But it kind of feels like we're going into this one with a bit more positivity than we have in recent years.
Yeah, definitely so. And like last year, we started with France as well, but we started with France away in Le Mans. And I actually went over to that match. And I remember at times seeing Ireland's defensive set and being like, oh my God, we could actually take this here. And obviously towards the last 20 minutes, France got a couple more tries in, but you could definitely see the turning of tables and how Ireland were performing. Obviously last Six Nations was just a step too far, but yeah, I think there'll be a new belief and confidence within the team, and that's huge when you're playing sports. Obviously, they have a good track record at Ravenhill. They beat and Kingspan. They beat Australia there just before the WXV. They beat Scotland in the last ditch in one of the Six Nations as well. So beating teams like Australia, going across the WXV1 and beating New Zealand, I think, and USA, who are quite a formidable team as well and quite physical, I think will really stand to them. And then the thing about it as well that I'm really excited about is the fact that so many of the players have been playing good rugby, good 15s rugby. You know, you've had the challenge, Celtic Challenge, maybe not as high of opposition as we would have liked. But, you know, the girls are playing high quality rugby week in, week out, which maybe I would have criticized other times where they weren't playing enough 15s rugby. So I think that's really beneficial. And then we also have the cohort that are playing in the Premiership, the likes of Niamh Jones coming back off the back of winning the title over there as well. So great experience coming back into the squad.
Fiona, someone who follows the Premiership week in, week out, and we don't unfortunately have the opportunity to see as much of it over here. What have you seen from those Irish players? Grace there mentions Niamh Jones.
Yeah, I mean, the standard of Premiership women's rugby in England is increasing year on year. I think it wouldn't be wrong to say that this year it's been the most competitive season yet. The standard across the board is just, you know, growing at a huge, huge rate. And Claire mentioned Nee Jones there. You know, she has been a standout in that Gloucester Hartbury title winning team who did the three-peat last week at the Stone X. And yeah, like it's such a great environment and such a professional environment for those Irish girls to really, you know, mix it with the best and really kind of, you know, fine-tune areas of their game that they perhaps otherwise wouldn't elsewhere. And yeah, it's become such a melting pot of players over there. You know, the girls in that league are mixing with the likes of Canadian players who are obviously, you know, some supreme athletes themselves. So yeah, it's priceless, really.
To set up, Fiona, from like, say, outside perspective, obviously we have the Six Nations coming up, Rugby World Cup as well this year, being hosted in England. I know so many people this side of the water who maybe aren't even massive rugby fans would have got tickets already for the Ireland games because there is that little bit of excitement building around the squad and the talent that's there. But in terms of where everyone is at of the Six Nations sides, can you set up this tournament for us a little bit?
It's always so difficult because I always feel like I go with my predictions and then I just end up getting them spectacularly wrong. But listen, I'm with Claire, to be fair, on this one. Like, I'd like to think that Ireland in particular can really kick on from that massive New Zealand win last year in WXV. Like, confidence is high. I've heard various things myself about how great the culture is in the squad at the minute. You know, they've really turned a corner from 18 months, 2 years ago, when we know that their off-field challenges were sort of well-documented. And if you look at the Six Nations, you've almost had like Scotland, Wales and Ireland all kind of together in that sort of like mid-table bubble. And, you know, there's one team that is waiting to kind of, you know, take the championship by the scruff of its neck, really, and really kind of challenge for those kind of historically kind of top two spots that we've seen between England and France. And I'd go as far to say that, you know, it is no longer a two-horse race anymore between England and France, because France have, I think they're on a 14-match losing streak, against England. And England certainly kind of pushed on a level last year against the French. So, you know, Ireland have this really fantastic opportunity, this championship, you feel, to, starting with this weekend, really, really take it to France and establish themselves as that kind of European force behind the Red Roses.
To listen to this morning's Off the Ball breakfast in full, become a member at offtheball.com/join now.